Something you'd like to get painted? Then bring it to Victory Powder Coating. Powder coating is a durable, colorful, environmentally friendly alternative to paint. It's useful in automotive, agricultural, decorative, and high-temperature applications. Victory Powder Coating has become the North State leader in powder coating applications and metal finishing. They specialize in large industrial items like truck beds, agricultural equipment, and trailers. They're dedicated to providing superior work and outstanding customer care. Consider Victory Powder Coating for your next project. Victory Powder Coating.
Join Aaron Ryan and Bill Cundiff for We the People Radio every Sunday from noon until 2. Our expert guests will give you the whole story rather than a bunch of sound bites. Our commercial-free archives are always available at wethepeopleradio.us.
Sponsored in part by Pape Machinery, located at 3119 Twinview Boulevard, for all your local John Deere Ag and Turf products. Join us every Sunday from noon until 2, wethepeopleradio.us.
What shall we do about them?
From the historic campus of Hillsdale College in Hillsdale, Michigan, where the good, the true, and the beautiful are taught, nurtured, and honored, this is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour, bringing the activity and education of the college to listeners across the country.
Jewish Americans, because they are looked at as white, even though somewhat ironically the majority of Israeli Jews are Middle Eastern and African backgrounds, Jews are placed in the category of white, and that colors the way, no pun intended, that colors the way that these campus debates about Israel play out.
This is your host, Scott Bertram, and that's Joel Pollack, senior editor-at-large, Breitbart, also author of the biography, Rhoda, Comrade Kadali, You Are Out of Order. We'll talk in depth a bit later with Joel about the connection between anti-Americanism and anti-Semitism. First, we're joined by Dr. David Diener. He is Assistant Professor of Education at Hillsdale College. Dr. Diener, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Talking today about the philosophy of education, if I'm not mistaken, your dissertation on the subject?
So I did a dual PhD in philosophy and philosophy of education, yes.
So a good person to talk to about this. Why is philosophy of education so important?
Well, that's a great question. I think the shortest answer is because you can't do education without it. So throughout history, people have recognized continually that philosophical questions and educational practice are closely intertwined, and that the doing of education, the practices of education, are based, whether you recognize it or not, on the answers you give to key philosophical questions. And so thinking about those and considering them is actually really important.
Where do these conversations begin? Where is the beginning of the philosophy of education? And as we move forward, where do we see significant changes in the philosophy, or where do we see some key historical developments along the way?
It's a great question. So historically, the discipline of philosophy of education is typically considered to begin in ancient Greece, where the Western philosophical tradition also started. Certainly there were people thinking philosophically and doing education for a long time before that. But the tradition of the philosophy of education is typically considered to start in ancient Greece. And over the course of history, it's interesting. Most of the philosophers that we would recognize their names within the context of philosophy also thought and wrote very deeply about education. So again, the kind of division that we see today in most cases between philosophy and education just simply didn't exist historically. So you start with ancient Greeks like Plato, Aristotle, Isocrates. These are deep philosophical thinkers, key thinkers within the tradition. The great philosophers, again, Augustine and Aquinas, others through the early modern period. John Locke, for example, was incredibly impactful in making education a national priority in England, and his thought greatly affected early education in the colonies in the early United States, and then on down the line. I mean, even somebody like Immanuel Kant, who if you've read Kant or know his thought, this will strike you maybe as funny, but he taught a series of courses on practical pedagogy. These are thinkers that care deeply about these questions.
There's another podcast at the Hillsdale College Podcast Network, the Hillsdale College K-12 Classical Education Podcast, and there's a series we do, which is Leading Figures in Education. And as you mentioned, there are some names on that list that we've done that are familiar. There are some that are slightly unexpected, perhaps. When we look back through the past few centuries, who are some of the leading figures who have been thinking about education and specifically the philosophy of education?
So there has been a pretty radical change in philosophy of education that happened really in the second half of the 19th century is sort of the locus of that change. And then that led into the early 20th century. So if you go back before that, you have some figures like Rousseau, Jean-Jacques Rousseau, who I think his philosophy of education is problematic in some ways, in significant ways, but he really did set a course. He wrote, a huge book, Emile, about education and other things as well. So that set a kind of trajectory. In the 19th century, education really changed, and two figures I'll mention. One would be John Henry Newman, mm-hmm. who authored in The Idea of the University a series of lectures. He was in many ways a stalwart defender of the classical liberal arts tradition and attempts to articulate why that tradition is so important and valuable in the face of the secularization that's happening and the turn toward a more utilitarian view of education. And then another thinker that in past centuries, especially in the past century, has been incredibly impactful is John Dewey. Mm-hmm. And so anytime we're talking about progressive education, the ideas of progressivism in the 20th century and of course into the 21st, John Dewey is a towering figure. He was a philosopher. He was a key member of the circle of philosophy known as pragmatism. So he's a pragmatist, and he really laid the philosophical groundwork for a lot of the educational changes that happened in the 20th and now the 21st century.
Talking with Dr. David Diener, he is assistant professor of education at Hillsdale College, about the philosophy of education. So who's listening to these discussions? What's the real world effect of these debates and conversations about the philosophy of education?
Those are two distinct questions, and I would give them two distinct answers. So the answer to the first question, who's listening, is, I would say, not enough people. There are not enough educational practitioners today or philosophers who are thinking carefully and deeply about these questions of philosophy of education. I feel incredibly blessed to be here at Hillsdale College, and both in our undergraduate program in classical education and in the master's program, these questions and these topics are addressed, front and center. We address them squarely. In my previous work in K-12 education as a headmaster and educational administrator, I always tried to bring them to bear. But the short answer is not enough people, I think, are considering these things. The second question, in terms of their impact or their effect, is it's everywhere. So, you might be teaching second grade and you might think, well, I'm just teaching, arithmetic and reading and, these basic skills. I don't need to know that much about these big fancy philosophical questions. But the reality is that everything that a second grade teacher does, I'm just using second grade as an example, mm-hmm. everything that a teacher at any level does on a day-to-day basis, again, whether you know it or not, is grounded in philosophical assumptions about the nature of your students, about the nature of reality, about what the process of learning involves. Every aspect of educational practice is governed by these philosophical questions. And so I think it's important that we think about them more carefully than we often do.
How would you define or describe the Hillsdale College philosophy of education? And is it similar or quite different from other colleges today?
So Hillsdale College's philosophy of education is very similar to the historical tradition and understanding of education, and therefore very different from the philosophy of most colleges today, which is your question. And I don't think you have to dig very deep to see some of those differences. So, for example, in the mission statement, one difference is that the education that we engage in here as faculty and students together is grounded in a gratefulness and an understanding that we have received something that didn't come from ourselves. Another key difference, I think, is that we recognize that the project of education in which we're engaged here at Hillsdale College is a process that is in continuity with the past. Again, just go to the mission statement. It talks about the philosophical and theological inheritance that traces back to Athens and Jerusalem. We are recipients of a long tradition of education and of people who have lived and thought deeply about what it means to exist well, what it means to be a human being, what civil society should look like, what the good life is, how we can live as individuals and in collaboration with other people for deeply human goals. And so, again, that's very different than the way that most colleges approach the past today.
Dr. David Diener, Assistant Professor of Education at Hillsdale College, talking about the philosophy of education. Dr. Diener, thanks so much for joining us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Thank you so much, Scott. It's a pleasure.
Up next, Joel Pollack, Senior Editor-at-Large at Breitbart, will talk with him about the connection between anti-Americanism and anti-Semitism. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
The property insurance crisis in California is starting to affect the business insurance property also. 200 to 300% rate increases in business property rates or not writing business insurance at all are becoming the norm. At Siskiyou Insurance, we have over 100 years experience in writing business insurance in the North State. We can help. We live here and care about our community and want to make sure that you keep your business with a local agent that knows our town and supports it every day. And we'll get you the best deal we can. Call Curtis Byron at Siskiyou Insurance Services, 530-224-2345 or 1-800-773-2345. Siskiyou Insurance, 530-224-2345 or 1-800-773-2345.
When people ask me for a recommendation for a heating or air conditioning company, I always say Alliance Heating and Air. Why? Well, they've been taking care of our HVAC system for 14 years. Professional, friendly, and willing to go to the extra step for their customers. I have found no problem too difficult or too minor for them to repair. I recommend Alliance Heating and Air with no reservations. You can reach them at 530-221-2642 or online at homecomfort.org. And they have 24/7 emergency assistance. Alliance Heating and Air.
Reading School of the Arts presents Disney's The Little Mermaid Jr. at the historic Cascade Theater, January 18th to 21st. This 60-minute musical is full of the songs you know and love from the animated film and the Broadway production. This production by Reading School of the Arts is the only of its kind. Students at the heart of the show, come support students in the arts and prepare to be entertained at the guilds.
Tickets available now at cascadetheater.org. That's Cascades, T-H-E-A-T-R-E.org. This production of The Little Mermaid Jr. is presented with special permission by Music Theater International.
Attention veterans, did you know that Shasta College and Simpson University have veterans resource centers to assist you in your educational pursuits? These centers offer a wide range of support services, including financial aid, tutoring, IT support, and more. We understand the unique challenges that veterans face and are committed to helping you succeed. Our experienced staff is here to help you navigate the college experience and achieve your academic and career goals. Don't let anything stand in your way. This message is brought to you by Senator Maurice Johannesson, former Secretary of California Veterans Affairs.
Welcome to the Queen of Dragons Dispensary, your ultimate destination for top-notch cannabis experiences. Conveniently located at 5044 Shasta Dam Boulevard, Shasta Lake, our locally owned and operated dispensary takes pride in providing you with the best in price, value, and safety. Rest easy knowing that all of our products are rigorously tested for your peace of mind. We champion medical freedom, empowering you to choose what's right for you. Unbelievable value for unbeatable quality. For exclusive deals and exciting updates, don't forget to follow us on Twitter at The Queen Dragons or visit www.queenofdragons.com. The Queen of Dragons Dispensary, where the fire of quality meets the freedom of choice. Backed by popular demand, fresh and local flower powered by Pinnacle, Shasta County's premier local cultivator. Package fresh and daily with a wide variety and best prices and deals in town. And they can package larger sizes and quantities on site. Available only at the Queen of Dragons Dispensary. Winter hours are Monday through Sunday, 9 a.m. to 7 p.m. and they deliver. 530-276-9771.
If the American people ever allow private banks to control the issuance of their currency, first by inflation, then by deflation, the banks and the corporations that will grow up around around them will deprive the people of all their property until their children wake up homeless on the continent their fathers conquered.
We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Revolution has started.
Sovereign Minds, now on Sundays, 10 to noon.
Welcome back to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. Be sure to check out the Hillsdale College Podcast Network. Find archived episodes of this program and much more at podcast.hillsdale.edu. We're joined by Joel Pollack. He is Senior Editor-at-Large at Breitbart News, also the author of the new biography, Rhoda, Comrade Kadali, You Are Out of Order. Joel, thanks so much for joining us.
It's great to be with you.
I appreciate your time today. You have an interesting background to talk about what we want to discuss today, this connection between anti-Semitism and anti-Americanism, especially on college and university campuses. You have a master's in Jewish studies. You also are a Harvard grad, too, so a lot of background to add to the conversation. People looked at what happened after the October terrorist attack by Hamas and saw what was happening on college campuses and the kind of language and discussions that were happening and were horrified. Many of us were horrified. And I think somewhat surprised, at least a portion of the population, this root of anti-Semitism on college campuses. Where do you think it begins?
It begins with the changing vision of what a university education is supposed to do. The American Academy has moved away from the traditional idea of scholarship and preparing the next generation to enter the workplace and providing skills and preserving knowledge and encouraging research. And it has moved into a mode of achieving a social utopia by training young people to be activists and to live their lives and pursue their careers in pursuit of a certain set of social goals. So the universities have become engines of social change. Some of that has a very idealistic foundation, but in departing from basic principles, the universities have opened themselves to take over by radical ideas and radical constituencies, and that's what we saw in the wake of October 7th. The Harvard Alumni Magazine had a very interesting article where they tried to cover the conflict about Harvard from both sides of the argument about the conflict between Israel and the Palestinian terrorist organization Hamas. And buried deep in the article, there was a description of pro-Palestinian protests that predated October 7th. Mm-hmm. And it said that, in fact, students had been interrupting the university convocation for years with pro-Palestinian chants and anti-Israel chants. And so this animosity toward Israel, which is the primary manifestation of campus anti-Semitism, and we'll get into the definition of anti-Semitism in a moment, but this form of protest has been growing. It wasn't there when I was there. I graduated from Harvard College in 1999, and then I went back several years later to law school. I graduated from Harvard Law School in 2009. So we're really talking about the past decade or so that this has become a phenomenon.
Joel, are there external factors we should be considering, changes in the broader society that then have an impact on college and university campuses?
The last 10 years, we've seen race become a major theme of American politics, despite the fact that there are fewer barriers to members of minority racial groups than there have ever been before. There's no legal discrimination against Black Americans. Systemic racism is an idea that the left has embraced, but we don't really see any elements of it in our legal, political, and social system as we have it today. Nonetheless, it has become an obsession in politics since the advent of the Black Lives Matter movement, and the campus debate has been affected by that as well. Jewish Americans, because they are looked at as white, even though, somewhat ironically, the majority of Israeli Jews mm-hmm. are Middle Eastern and African backgrounds, Jews are placed in the category of white, and that colors the way, no pun intended, that colors the way that these campus debates about Israel play out. many of the students participating in anti-Israel protest may not understand that by attacking Israel, they are also attacking Jews. And some of them are careful to make distinctions, but what they are doing essentially is showing an extreme indifference to Jewish life, to atrocities committed against Jews. That's the primary manifestation of it. And then occasionally you have more active and explicit forms of anti-Semitism that target Jewish institutions, that target rabbis on campus, that prevent Jewish students from going to class, things like that. But the problem has existed for a while. It's grown for a while. It exploded after October 7th because of the spectacular success of the Hamas terror attack, which inspired many anti-Israel and pro-Palestinian activists long before Israel had mounted any kind of response. It inspired them to march, to demonstrate, to protest.
I want to ask about another potential reason, because at that now infamous House hearing with the presidents of the universities a few weeks ago, there was an anti-Semitism scholar from American University, Dr. Pamela Nadell, who said that anti-Semitism is an American tradition, in effect saying we should perhaps just expect this sort of thing because that's what has happened here in America. Is she right about that? Any truth to that?
That was one of the most important mistakes of the hearing. It was overlooked because of the fireworks in the exchanges between Representative Elise Stefanik and the three university presidents when she posed the question of whether calling for the genocide of Jews would violate the campus code of conduct. And of course, their noncommittal responses elicited all the media controversy and eventually led to the resignations of two out of the three presidents thus far. But Nadell's point was very interesting, and her view is widely shared among liberal Jewish scholars and institutional leaders, which is that there is a tradition of anti-Semitism in America. And that is a mistaken view. It is true that there are periods throughout American history where there has been anti-Semitism. You can talk about some early discrimination in the colonial era. You can talk about General Ulysses S. Grant issuing various edicts that discriminated against the Jewish community during the Civil War. You can look at the exclusion of Jews from social clubs and from Ivy League institutions in the early 20th century. You can look at all that. But the real American tradition is a tradition of tolerance and of philo-Semitism, if anything, a love and embrace, not just of Jews, but of Jewish texts and Jewish history, and even from a very early stage, the idea of a new Jewish republic in the land of Israel, which was embraced by President John Adams, for example. So there is a deep tradition of America embracing Jews, and it goes back to President George Washington's letter to the Hebrew congregation at Newport. It's a very, very important text, not just because it promises Jews that they will always be safe in the United States, but also because it outlines the basis of religious liberty in America. He wrote this letter in 1790, just a year after he had taken office, very shortly after the adoption of the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. And this letter gives us some insight into how the founders understood religious liberty. That's the American tradition. That's the real American tradition. It's a tradition of tolerance that goes deeper than tolerance. It's a tradition of a radical embrace of the right to worship, the freedom of conscience. And that's unique in the world. And I wish that that had come out more in that anti-Semitism hearing.
Joel, we'll pause there and come back in a moment. More about this subject, as well as your biography of Rhoda Kadaly, the great journalist and civil rights activist. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Thirty years ago, Simpson University arrived in Redding with a promise to serve the North State. Warmly welcomed by this far Northern California community, we forged lasting partnerships, serving our neighbors locally as well as globally. Building on our promise, Simpson University now offers over 20 degree programs. Our promise to be the gateway to world service begins in our backyard. Learn more about Redding's hometown university at simpsonu.edu.
Umpqua Bank presents Predator vs. Prey Indoor Animal Show at Turtle Bay Exploration Park, featuring live animals showcasing their natural survival techniques used for hunting, foraging, adapting, and surviving in the wild. This educational animal show features mammals, reptiles, and free-flying birds, Saturdays from 2 to 2:30 inside the Mill Building at Turtle Bay. Included with paid admission, free for members, great for animal enthusiasts of all ages. Learn more at turtlebay.org.
Classical music lovers, listen up. Internationally known piano player Olga Popolova is presenting a concert called The Not-So-Invisible World of Female Composers, featuring the works of Cecile Chaminade, Clara Schumann, Florence Price, and many others, Wednesday, January 24th at St. James Church in Reading. Ms. Popolova is performing this benefit concert to show her appreciation to our community who warmly received her family fleeing the Russian-Ukrainian war. Proceeds from the $20 tickets will benefit the Foundation for Performing Arts Education and Reading Piano Angels. Student tickets are $10. Pay at the door or go online to readingpianoangels.com. Olga Popolova is the principal pianist for the Sao Paulo Symphonic Orchestra in Brazil. This one-night-only performance at 7 p.m. Wednesday, January 24th at St. James Lutheran Church on Shastaview Drive in Reading. World-class classical piano for a good cause. Wednesday, January 24th at St. James Church. Get tickets at the door or go online to readingpianoangels.com.
This Hawaiian mini vacation is brought to your radio by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning. So what does professional office cleaning have to do with relaxing in a tropical paradise? Frankly, nothing. But Maui Bob and the crew want to remind you to be sure to take the time for what's important in this workaday world. Family, friends, and yes, even yourself. And if their professional office cleaning services can help you make that time, give them a call at 221-5868. This Hawaiian mini vacation was brought to your radio by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning, 221-5868.
Join Token's radio show every Sunday at 2 p.m. on 96.5 FM and AM 1460 as host Christy Matthews and Linda Kent explore the exciting world of cryptocurrency and blockchain technology. Learn how Bitcoin is revolutionizing finance and grasp sound money principles. Hear new perspectives on achieving financial freedom beyond broken institutions. The future of money is here. Empower yourself with knowledge. Listen to Token's radio show with Linda and Christy this Sunday at 2 p.m. on KCNR. Big and exciting changes are underway.
Hi, this is Elle. Join me and my good friend and co-host Ron Lim and Lenny Matthews for our show Ask Elle right here on KCNR 96.5 FM and 1460 AM. Every Tuesday night at 6 p.m., we'll be exploring powerful topics on how to have a successful and satisfying relationship. See you here on Tuesday night at 6 p.m. Brought to you by KNS Staffing Solutions.
530-605-4517.
We're back on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. We've been talking with Joel Pollack, Senior Editor-at-Large at Breitbart, about a recent essay on the roots of anti-Semitism on campus and the connection to anti-Americanism. Now, Joel, we heard a lot about free speech during that House hearing, Joel. Should we have heard more about freedom of religion and for Jewish students on these campuses, the freedom to practice their religion?
If you call for the destruction of Israel, you are calling for an assault on the religious liberty of Jewish Americans, because for thousands of years, Jews have prayed facing Jerusalem. Jews have prayed for the welfare of the land of Israel. After every meal, in every daily prayer, the land of Israel is very important theologically to Judaism. Of course, Judaism has existed without Israeli statehood, but the destruction of Israel and the genocidal violence that would accompany it, which we saw on October 7th, is an attack on the Jewish faith, and it would prevent Jews from exercising our faith in the same way. And so the issue of radical criticism of Israel, calls for the destruction of Israel from the river to the sea and all of that, it's also a matter of religious liberty. And that's where the founding American principle comes in, and that fundamental commitment that George Washington made to the American Jewish community, that your religious liberty is God-given and you will always be safe in the United States. That's the problem with those anti-Israel extremists on campus. They are violating the religious liberty of Jewish Americans and all Americans, really, but of Jewish Americans in particular. And in the classical liberal idea, your freedom extends up to the point where it impacts my freedom.
Uh-huh.
And if your free speech is interfering with my religious liberty, then there's a problem.
Talking with Joel Pollack, senior editor-at-large at Breitbart News, his piece at Breitbart, The Roots of Campus Anti-Semitism. In there, Joel, you say that students on many college campuses are taught that U.S. prosperity is a product of unjust privilege, exploitation, that capitalism is bad, that success is bad. They are taught to hate America in many ways. Is Israel viewed through that same lens on campuses?
I had this revelation when I was at law school, and my wife, who was then my girlfriend, was an undergraduate studying economics, and she was telling me about all the things she was being taught in her lectures on American economic history, and I could scarcely believe what she was saying because some of these things were so radical. So one day I went to the lecture. Now, after I attended this lecture in American economic history, I understood that the origins of some of that skepticism toward Israel or criticism of Israel had nothing to do with Israel. Most students don't arrive on campus with a particular view on the Middle East. It's far away, it's unfamiliar. But what students are taught about America is that our prosperity is essentially stolen. And at this particular lecture, the topic was the development of the internet. And the professor told the students that the internet was essentially a government project that had been exploited by greedy individuals to become insanely wealthy. Now, of course, there is some government history in the development of the World Wide Web and so forth. But when you denigrate success, when you denigrate individual hard work and ambition in that way, students start to look at all forms of success that way. And it dawned on me sitting there in the lecture that that is why so many students find it easy to oppose Israel, because if America's success is unjust, well, then Israel's success can also easily be described as unjust or colonial or exploitative and so forth. And it is placed in that same category of unjust or stolen successes. But that's how American students are explaining away every success. And that's why it becomes easy for them to be indoctrinated to hate Israel.
Joel Pollack is with us, senior editor-at-large at Breitbart News. You can read his piece at Breitbart, The Roots of Campus Anti-Semitism. Joel, we have a couple of minutes here, and I wanted to make sure we talked about something that you have done for us and for our students here at Hillsdale. You and your wife, Julia Pollack, have created an endowed journalism scholarship here at Hillsdale in memory of Julia's mother, who was journalist and human rights activist, Rhoda Kadali. Tell us first what we should know about this woman. Who was Rhoda Kadali?
Rhoda Kadali was a black feminist who was among the South African leaders of the anti-apartheid struggle, and particularly among the feminist leaders of that struggle. She was born in 1953 in a segregated South Africa. Her family was later forcibly removed from their home because they were quote-unquote colored or mixed race, living in an area that was suddenly designated as whites only. So she grew up as a victim of racial discrimination in a very real way. When Nelson Mandela was released in 1990 and he was elected president in 1994, he named Rhoda as one of the 11 members of South Africa's new Human Rights Commission. She was a person who commanded great respect, greatly feared, because she was determined to achieve equality. However, after several years on the Human Rights Commission, she resigned, and she resigned in protest because she felt the ruling party, the African National Congress, was not taking human rights seriously enough. And she began her own project, which aimed to highlight the successful examples of social development projects in South Africa, to research what they had done and to share that knowledge with governments throughout South Africa at every level, local, provincial and national, in the hopes that they would replicate these best practices. And she obtained funding from some institutions in the United States and eventually raised her own funding in South Africa. She truly believed in a society that did not discriminate on the basis of race. She believed in the value of hard work. She believed in integrity and transparency. She became one of the most important voices for the political opposition in the new South Africa, from having been one of the most important voices for the anti-apartheid movement before 1994. And in later years, she became an admirer of Donald Trump. She admired what she saw as Trump's ability to achieve reforms by sweeping aside the old establishments and the status quo. And she was not an uncritical supporter of Donald Trump. She didn't like some of the things he had said about female candidates, for example, when he had a fight with Carly Fiorina in the 2015 Republican debate.
Mm-hmm.
But she believed that American politics, like South African politics, had become complacent. And so she liked the idea of draining the swamp. She unfortunately passed away from lung cancer. She had never smoked, but she was diagnosed with lung cancer in 2021, and she passed away in early 2022.
Joel, both you and your wife are graduates of Harvard, and I have to ask, in doing this, why do it here at Hillsdale and not somewhere else?
We believe that her example can inspire many more people, and that Hillsdale in particular is an institution that can best honor her legacy. Rhoda's quiet moral center throughout her entire life was her Christian faith. It guided her to a political consciousness when she became active against racism, and it guided her in her criticism of the new South African government when it became corrupt and when it overemphasized race and racial redistribution. So Hillsdale is an institution that encapsulates her values of non-racism, of faith, of hard work, and of the fundamental principles of education that have been forgotten at so many other campuses. And education is the most important commodity for equality. It's the most important tool. It's also the one thing you can't redistribute. It has to be earned by every individual, whether rich or poor. Rhoda understood and believed very fervently that everybody had to work to get to where they were, and she never discounted the contributions of people because of their social status or their skin color and background. She valued people for what they could contribute. And I think that Hillsdale embodies those values as well. And I hope that more students will become familiar with her legacy through this scholarship.
And you could read more about her in the biography written by Joel. Rhoda, Comrade Kadali, you are out of order. Joel Pollack, senior editor-at-large at Breitbart News. You can read his piece, To the Roots of Campus Anti-Semitism, there. Joel, thanks so much for joining us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Thank you.
Up next, Parker Thayer, an investigative researcher at Capital Research Center, will talk about his investigation on how charities are secretly helping the left win elections. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Hi friends, RC here, bringing you this month's Cigar of the Humidor, the Diesel Vintage. A smooth burn, a perfect draw, and flavor for days. This is what an expertly crafted Parejo from the farms of A.J. Fernandez offers us. The Diesel Vintage is everything we seek in a fine and exceptional cigar experience. Get yours today at Tobacco and Brew, Redding, California.
Every day, your life is filled with choices. And when a health crisis happens, you need to be prepared to choose the best healthcare partner. That's when Shasta Regional Medical Center is there to answer the call above the rest. Ranked best in Reading and in the nation for patient safety and clinical excellence, you can be confident that when you choose Shasta, you are choosing superior care, safety, and excellence for you and your family. Choose Shasta at ShastaRegional.com.
It's never too late to start at Shasta College. Late start classes and 8-week compressed classes are still available. To learn more about upskilling or reskilling for a current job or career, information is online at ShastaCollege.edu or call one of our counselors to see how easy it is to get enrolled at 530-242-7650. Shasta College offers in-person, hybrid, and online class options to fit your busy life and responsibilities. Financial aid is available. More at ShastaCollege.edu.
This is Ted Leidy with Northern Firearms Instruction. Do you have a crazy schedule and can't seem to get to a class to qualify for your CCW, CCW renewal, or maybe learn to use that new firearm you just purchased? Consider a private class with NFI. Learn to shoot a handgun, rifle, shotgun, or even a BB gun. Classes are taught by an instructor that you choose on your dates and location. Give NFI a call at 530-999-1822 or visit us online at usgunpro.com. This is Ted Leidy, and I'll see you at the range.
This is Carl Mott. Join us Thursday as we welcome Supervisor Patrick Jones at 7 a.m. to talk about what's happening in the county, including the new jail and other topics. Plus, Judy Maxwell is on at 8 o'clock to catch us all up on what's happening in the insurance industry here in California. All of this Thursday, right here, Free Fire Radio, KCNR, 96.5 FM, 1460 AM, your talk radio. Miss a day, miss a day.
Join Aaron Ryan and Bill Cundiff for We the People Radio every Sunday from noon until 2. Our expert guests will give you the whole story rather than a bunch of sound bites. Our commercial-free archives are always available at wethepeopleradio.us.
Sponsored in part by Pape Machinery, located at 3119 Twinview Boulevard, for all your local John Deere Ag and Turf products. Join us every Sunday from noon until 2, wethepeopleradio.us.
What shall we do about this?
/new course.
Welcome back to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. You can get an email every time there's a new episode of this program. Go to radiohour.hillsdale.edu and click subscribe. That's radiohour.hillsdale.edu. We're joined now by Parker Thayer. He is investigative reporter at Capital Research Center. You can find more at capitalresearch.org. He's also a 2021 graduate of Hillsdale College. Parker, thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
We discussed today your report for Capital Research Center. Again, people can find it at capitalresearch.org. How charities secretly help win elections. This is focused on something called the Everybody Votes campaign in the 2020 cycle. Give us a little bit of 20,000 feet about what Everybody Votes is and what this focus of this report is.
Yeah, well, it's not just 2020. It's also coming up in 2024.
Right.
But kind of broad strokes, what we discovered was a mysterious nonpartisan, supposedly nonprofit organization, tax exempt, of course, raking in hundreds of millions of dollars from big named left wing donors, people like George Soros, Warren Buffett, names people would recognize, and lots of other left wing kind of dark money groups that are meant to obscure where the donations came from. So those are untraceable. But we found that this, it was called the Voter Registration Project, was its legal name, was spending hundreds of millions of dollars from 2015 to 2020, was spending hundreds of millions of dollars on voter registration initiatives targeting Democrat favorable demographics using tax exempt funds, but only in 8 key swing states. We thought it was a little bit suspicious, and we did some more digging, and eventually we found out that this organization was going by the name of Everybody Votes campaign, and that it was initially spawned by a plan drawn up in the emails of John Podesta back in 2016 when he was running Hillary Clinton's campaign. The goal was to use tax-exempt funds, thus making them much more cost-effective than typical campaign contributions, to boost Democratic turnout by registering only voters in those demographics which most favorably vote for Democrats. In all, they raised over $120 million since 2016 to 2020. They registered 5.1 million people, and they did this all in complete secrecy, and they took efforts to intentionally remain secret. We didn't find out about this really in public light until the 2020 election, when a memo from a super PAC run by Sam Bankman-Fried's mom, it seems hard to believe that this is all true, a super PAC from Sam Bankman-Fried's mom, the now convicted fraudster, was telling all of its billionaire donors, was advising them on where to send their money. And in the memo that was leaked by a great reporter by the name of Teddy Schleifer, the memo told all the donors, don't waste your money giving to campaigns, candidates, PACs, etc. Give it to these nonprofits instead, because since they're tax exempt, it's 4 to 10 times more cost effective at generating additional Democratic votes with your dollars. This case, nobody knew about it until we exposed it. And we now know that they're going to do this again in 2024, targeting pretty much the exact same states.
So I want to ask this directly to get a response, and that is, you know, people who run Everybody Votes or Voter Registration Project said, well, I mean, what's the problem? We're just registering voters. Don't you want more people to be registered to vote? So at core, what's the issue here?
Yeah, exactly. And to that criticism, I would say I would love for everybody to be registered to vote, and it'd be great if everybody voted in every election. But under the current laws, you cannot do partisan things, and I think it's a good thing that you can't do partisan things, with tax-exempt organizations, specifically things to affect elections. Those are uniquely prohibited. And this, well, we have proof that this organization was designed from the very beginning to be completely partisan and to get Democrats into office. So, you know, if you want to go out and register someone on your own, go for it. But don't use a tax-exempt organization to do it, and definitely don't raise hundreds of millions of dollars from the Democratic Party's biggest donors and then use partisan consultants to do your voter registration.
Talking with Parker Thayer, his report is at capitalresearch.org. It's called How Charities Secretly Help Win Elections. One organization included in your report is called Mind the Gap, and there's some research that is shared among the documents inside the report, too, that talks about how effective this effort was because it was coded to be nonpartisan. Nonpartisan voter drives 2 to 5 times more effective at achieving the goals of registering more Democrats. Why do you think that's so? Why is nonpartisan more effective than someone saying, hey, let's elect these people we want to win?
Well, I should add, it says 2 to 5, but then it goes on to say, after you consider the tax-exempt status
right.
of supposedly nonpartisan organizations, that's actually 4 to 10 times more cost-effective. The reason that, and this is a thing, a scandal that's been going on for a very long time, if you'll remember, President Obama, his first job was as a community organizer at one of these organizations called Project Vote.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Stacey Abrams in Georgia, she also ran a similar organization called the New Georgia Project, along with a few others. These organizations are extremely powerful in our politics because of the tax-exempt status, because they can accept completely anonymous donations since they are 501c3s, which is something I don't disagree with. But when you're putting that money into electoral politics, that funding is currently required to be disclosed if you donate to a PAC. But through the nonprofits, it's both tax-exempt and anonymous, which makes them extremely powerful. And it's a scandal the IRS has kind of been turning a blind eye to for a very long time. It is painfully obvious to anyone who studies these organizations that they are intended to be, you know, tax-exempt Democratic PACs that provide the Democratic Party with an enormous advantage. But the IRS is more than willing to turn a blind eye to that, while also auditing conservative organizations disproportionately and trying to shut them down, as we saw back in the Lois Lerner scandal even.
Parker, looking back at the 2020 cycle with years of work thrown into it and $190 million put toward it, the question, mm-hmm. of course, is did it work? Now, it can be hard to say X directly led to Y, which led to votes for Z when going through something like this. But what do we think? Do we think it worked in 2020?
Yeah. So based on their own data, because we have several leaked documents from describing, you know, how this plan worked and what turnout margins they were expecting to have, we know from their website, which they only posted after they were caught, doing all of this and to pretend like they were trying to be transparent. We know they registered 5.1 million people. By our estimates, based on documents we obtained from the creators of this whole plan, we can safely estimate that between 1 million and 2.7 million Biden votes in 8 key swing states resulted from the work of the Everybody Votes campaign and this voter registration work. That would be over 1% of his total national turnout. And when you apply that down to individual swing states, that is an enormous potential impact. In many cases, the projected votes from the initial plan were much greater, 10 times larger than the 2020 presidential margins of victory.
Parker, you mentioned earlier it continues, it will continue into the 2024 cycle. What have you learned or what do you know about the amount of money perhaps pledged toward efforts like this for 2020 and perhaps goals for these nonpartisan voter registration efforts toward 2024?
Yeah. We know a good deal about what they're up to in 2024. We know who their employees are. They have the former head of the Wisconsin Democratic Party is now leading this supposedly nonpartisan organization. Convenient, isn't it? We also know from job listings that we were able to find online that they are targeting 8 more states in the 2024 election. Those states are Florida, Georgia, Michigan, Nevada, Arizona, Pennsylvania, Texas, and Wisconsin. They seem to be anticipating a large amount of fundraising because their staff size has increased. And we know they received large amounts of money in 2020 from people like George Soros, the Arabella Advisors Network, for those who may have heard of that. This is going to keep going as long as the IRS is going to let it keep happening.
Okay, so that was exactly my next question. So I'll ask it here. I believe it's your phrase in this piece at capitalresearch.org that you call it a weaponization of charity. So why isn't the IRS more interested in what's going on here? We hear day after day, month after month, about the Biden administration and additional IRS agents. We have to find more money. People aren't paying their fair share in taxes, et cetera, et cetera. Why isn't the IRS more interested in what's happening here?
You know, I can guess. I mean, it is really amazing that the IRS, these 87,000 additional IRS agents, which were supposedly going to only audit millionaires and billionaires, are turning a blind eye to a political tax-exempt political operation being run exclusively by millionaires and billionaires. The reason they're turning a blind eye is because the IRS considers being a Democrat a tax-exempt function, and it has for a very long time because this agency is filled with people who are politically inclined, shall we say, and willing to turn a blind eye to things as long as it's on their side of the aisle. It's wrong, and it needs to be stopped.
Parker Thayer, investigative researcher at Capital Research Center. You can find more at capitalresearch.org, including this report, How Charities Secretly Help Win Elections. Parker also on X, formerly Twitter, at Parker Thayer. He's a 2021 graduate of Hillsdale College. Parker, thanks so much for joining us today on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Thank you.
That will wrap up this edition of the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. Our thanks to Dr. David Diener from Hillsdale's Education Department, Joe Pollack from Breitbart, and Parker Thayer from Capital Research Center. The Radio Free Hillsdale Hour is recorded at the studios of WRFH, the student-run radio station at Hillsdale College. Remember, you can hear new episodes every week on this station. You also can find extended versions of some of our interviews or listen anytime to the podcast. Find it at podcast.hillsdale.edu or wherever you get your audio. The assistant producer of the program is Sam Lair. Until next week, I'm Scott Bertram, and this has been the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Do you or someone you love struggle with PTSD, anxiety, depression, insomnia, OCD, alcoholism, substance abuse disorder, autism, ADHD, brain fog, or traumatic brain injury? At Shasta Meadows Wellness Center, Dr. Tiger and his team offer safe, proven, and effective care, even for those resistant to typical medicine. Learn more about Shasta Meadows Wellness Center. They have IV ketamine or at-home oral ketamine. Ask about the state-of-the-art EEG guided TMS therapy. This customized, safe, no side effect option is effective on a wide range of difficult to treat conditions. Visit us today at ShastaMeadowsWellness.com. Don't just get by, get well.
Call to make an appointment for a free consultation. 530-444-8304. 530-444-8304. Shasta Meadows Wellness Center in Reading.
When people ask me for a recommendation for a heating or air conditioning company, I always say Alliance Heating and Air. Why? Well, they've been taking care of our HVAC system for 14 years. Professional, friendly, and willing to go to the extra step for their customers. I have found no problem too difficult or too minor for them to repair. I recommend Alliance Heating and Air with no reservations. You can reach them at 530-221-2642 or online at homecomfort.org. And they have 24/7 emergency assistance. Alliance Heating and Air.
This is Carl Bott
and Ted Leidy.
We want to invite you to our new show, Man Up, the fourth Thursday of each month, right here on KCNR 96.5 FM and 1460 AM.
Man Up, 6 to 7 p.m., where we explore the lost art of being a man.
Spirits, cigars, and hit the ground running when you get up in the morning. That's what Man Up's going to be about.
Oh, don't forget motorcycles, guns, and hard work every day.
And those things that men talk about when women aren't around.
That's right. Even cooking sometimes.
Even cooking sometimes. People, places, and things.
Serving your family, your community, and your country.
Man Up. Fourth Thursday of each month from 6 to 7 p.m. right here on Free Fire Radio.
Hello there, this is Kevin Cry. Every other Sunday, I will be on KCNR, your talk radio, 96.5 FM and 1460 AM. I will be discussing the issues that matter to you most. You'll be able to call in directly, ask questions, and have a dialogue open and free every other Sunday right here on KCNR, your talk radio.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.